From the Gettysburgian and 91.1 WZBT Gettysburg, I'm Ben Ponce, and this is On Target.
I'm Gari Mangala, and today on Target, we will be discussing the recent faculty meeting and a recent protest in the art department.
Then we'll sit down with scholarly communications assistant Sarah Apadu to talk about the textbook prices as a social justice issue. Stay with us. All right, well, let's get into the news. The lead story perhaps this week would be the art exhibition, the juried student exhibition, an annual event in Schmucker Art Gallery in which Gettysburg's art students display work, and the work is judged by an external juror. This year's juror was from Dickinson. And this year there was a protest. Gari, tell us a little more.
Some students took down 9 works of art from the juried exhibition, and you know, left some notes about it. But essentially, the sentiment was that they felt that the department, the art and art history departments, do not support marginalized communities, and that they if you can't support my identity, you can't like my art, was a comment that Angelique Acevedo, class of 2019, who was one of the artists that took down her work, mentioned in a statement that was later turned into the Gettysburgian by a few of the artists. They discussed issues within the department in terms of, you know, being a very Eurocentric system, and that they... you know, they want to see more of a diverse array of courses, curriculum, but also they didn't feel accepted in their community. I think part of that came from a recent hiring, if Ben, you want to talk about that.
Yeah, so, I mean, there are a total of 6 tenure-track positions within the art and art history department, and that's one department. 3 of them are in art history, and 3 of them are in studio art. And last year... a professor left the art studio department shortly after getting tenure, which was kind of an interesting situation. But in any case, the search occurred this year, and Austin Stigemeyer, who is currently in that line as a visiting assistant professor. So what tends to happen when these searches occur is that you do a quicker search for a 1 or 2 year appointment as a visiting assistant professor, and then you conduct a national search for the tenure track position the following year. And so that happened. And in this case, the candidate who was hired was currently the visiting assistant professor. And some students who are in Stigemeyer's classes have raised concerns about some of his pedagogical approaches and otherwise. And those concerns haven't been specifically explicated in public settings, although I think the upshot of the critiques has to do with feelings of racism in the classroom and bias. And I think, Gari, it comes back to what you were discussing, that the curriculum, they say, is pretty Eurocentric.
Yeah.
Insofar as, you know, art studio majors are required to take a couple of courses in Western art survey. And so they have said that those student artists who want to produce art outside of that Western canon may not receive grades they feel proud of, I believe was the quote from the letter. And so, you know, it's one of those things where currently there is some dialogue occurring between those students and the members of the department. There was a meeting earlier last week. We're recording this on Saturday, April the 6th. That meeting, I believe, occurred last Monday. And at that meeting, you know, it was all of the current tenure track mm-hmm. faculty, as well as the protesting students and a handful of others. And it's our understanding that out of that meeting, there was some conversation about the potential for a pilot program wherein students would have a greater level of input into faculty searches, which I think was one of the primary demands that was listed at the end of that letter. You know, Vice Provost Jack Ryan has said, he's also the Dean of Arts and Humanities, has said that including students including students on searches is a healthy thing to do, gathering their input. However, at Gettysburg, there's not a culture necessarily of including students on the committees themselves, but in most departments, mm-hmm. there is some formalized mechanism for students to hear candidate presentations and provide feedback. You know, I can speak to what happens in the political science department. There was a search last year. They invited a number of students to have lunch with the candidates and fill out feedback forms. And then thereafter, there was a presentation of that candidate, like a research talk, and some students were invited and also filled out feedback. And that feedback, supposedly, I mean, I have no way of really knowing what happened behind the closed doors, was incorporated into the conversation. I know that when the conservatory has recently hired James Day as its director, and then more recently Cesar Leal as the orchestra director, in both cases, in both searches, a number of candidates came, gave various presentations to students in various formats. And again, there were feedback forms, both online and on paper. And I think that that did not happen in this art search, and that is something that I think, you know, Jack Ryan and others and the students protesting think should have happened. And you know, candidly, it's hard to argue with the idea that students who are going to, you know, be taking a professor, particularly in a small department like art or studio art, where there are a total of three tenured permanent faculty members, that they shouldn't have at least some level of input into who's getting hired, even if it, you know, it doesn't even sound like there was much conversation at the beginning about what you might. I mean, I think there are a number of models in which this could, this feedback could be solicited, but it just doesn't really sound as if it was solicited in any of those ways.
Yeah, I think neither of us are art or art history majors, but I do have a theater arts major, and we're also in a very small department with just three full-time professors and three tenured professors, sorry. And for us, I think, like, in these art majors, like art, like theater arts, like music, it is very clear that, like, the grading system and just, like, the way you're going to learn is a very subjective process. In some ways, people are just telling you if you have talent, and that is part of your grade. And that can be hard, but when you, as a student, believe that there's some bias involved in your grading, that can be discouraging. And especially if you didn't have a voice in the hiring process, I can see how that would be disturbing for students. It seems as though in an interview I had with one of the students, Lars Healy, I asked him if he had felt that he had been heard, and he said something along the lines of, you know, I think we're beyond being heard at this point. It's about getting things done. And I think this goes back to essentially a very large theme that we've been talking about a lot on OnTarget lately, about, you know, when issues like this come up, it's not really about having a dialogue anymore. It's about, like, doing something. And it sounds like things are being done, and I want things to be done, because I think if they just have this meeting and it ends there, it will not have been a productive discussion at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly a theme of a lot of conversations relating lately to diversity and inclusion at the college has been that we're really good at talking about these issues and professing a desire to make progress on them and fix things, but that, you know, we're less great at actually doing things. It's interesting, JMR, President Riggs, said at a recent faculty meeting, you know, from her perspective, she's tried to make these issues a focus of her presidency, and she would say that a lot of progress has been made, and certainly in a lot of areas, there has been progress. You know, Jean Arnold has been hired as a chief diversity officer for the college. The college has doubled the number in recent years of domestic students of color that it's enrolled. That number eclipsed 20% in the most recent entering class. But JMR said, and I think many other students would say, that, you know, progress is still not, you know, defining when there are very real issues that continue to exist. And, you know, Riggs said this at a faculty meeting, and she said that these students' concerns should be our concerns. And you know, it's nice rhetoric, but it'll be interesting, particularly with a new president on his way in. And, you know, Bob Giuliano at Harvard chaired the President's Commission on Inclusion and Belonging, And so he said that that was work that is important work and work that he will do here. And so it'll be interesting to see the manifestations of that early, particularly early in his presidency.
Mm-hmm. I think that would be a good segue into the recent faculty meeting that you were speaking about a little bit. And they discussed a possible business major. Ben, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So the business major is something that has been proposed now for, it's been discussed now in its current iteration for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
But over the course of the fall semester, members of the faculty, particularly in the management department, have been fleshing out a proposal for what a second major in business could look like. And it's important to note that this is a second major that they're talking about, as in it would have to be a double major. You couldn't be just a business major. And there are some reasons for that. But I think that the goal is for this to be rather interdisciplinary. So a proposal came before the faculty on Thursday in which, you know, Heather Odell Dassault and Bennett Bruce, who are the chair of the management department and a lecturer, respectively. Bennett Bruce was the chair for a number of years. And they kind of walked through their thinking and the process. This proposal has gone through the academic programs and policy committee twice. Both times there were some pretty significant revisions requested. Candidly, I think that the interdisciplinary connections they're claiming are so foundational to this major seem not yet to be fully fleshed out. The outline of the major as it's been proposed is that it would require six courses that are the current six courses required for the business minor. The business minor would continue to exist, but six courses that are required for the business minor plus an additional course in ethics, and then a three-course electives that would have to be tied back to either the student's first major or to some other interdisciplinary area, or they're talking about adding some elective courses in the management department in areas such as marketing or those sorts of things, and then a capstone course, as well as a what they're calling an action learning experience mm-hmm. that would be either an internship or studying abroad or something of that nature. And so, you know, the proposal as it was put forth raised a number of questions. In fact, more questions and comments than were heard at the first faculty meeting. I think that the reason they tried to put it on this agenda as a presentation was so they could potentially vote to approve it at the next meeting. I think at this point that is rather unlikely. They were not planning for this to begin in the fall. Anyway, they're talking about it beginning in the fall of 2020. So, you know, it could still happen potentially early in the fall semester, fall 2019 semester, and still have that same timeline. But, you know, the lingering concerns had to do with the financial viability of the program. Certainly, it would require hiring new faculty. And Chris Zappi, the provost, said as much, that he would anticipate needing at least two new tenure track lines in the management department. There was also concern raised by Char Weiss, who's a professor of economics, previously was the chair of the management department, and currently chairs the interdisciplinary committee that runs the public policy program, wondering why this is going to be run out of the management department and not by an interdisciplinary committee in similar fashion to whether it's public policy, women, gender, sexuality studies, globalization studies. All of these areas have committees
mm-hmm.
that are composed of faculty from across the college that at least steer their operations. There was really not much of a response as to why this would be housed out of the management department, and I think that's likely to be a continued sticking point. You know, the meeting closed with Drew Murphy, who is a lecturer over in that department and runs the Entrepreneurship and Social Innovation Initiative the college launched a little while ago, and he was talking about how he helped develop the business minor 11 years ago, and how, you know, from his perspective, this is a natural extension of that. And while he personally would not be inclined to call it business, he would be inclined to call it something that kind of encapsulates the interdisciplinary connections, he said, you know, there is no such thing as business. There's the business of X. And what we're talking about here is making every student study X, and then we're just going to teach them about the business of X. And so whether that would be studio art or music or whatever else, and I think both of those departments have taken some interest in participating in some fashion, mm-hmm. you know, it'll be interesting to see where this goes from here. I did also want to highlight that there was a brief discussion of the course proposals that I'm not sure we discussed on this podcast, but that the Gettysburgian has covered, wherein faculty have been offered $2,000 mm-hmm. to run courses in to develop new courses that would support this business major. And there were apparently 24 course proposals that were received. Based on my conversations with the provost, it seems not all of them are going to be approved, at least for this $2,000 incentive. But he had said before that he would imagine it would be less than 10. It'll be interesting to see what transpires there, although I will say that they named a few of the course proposals they received. One of the more interesting ones was, I'll make you an offer, you can't refuse, business and the mafia. there's also business, Chinese, global media industries, which I believe is a course that already runs in some fashion, so not sure how that would be a new course per se. There was something about anthropological perspectives on business. And so who knows where this is going to go? I think there was a healthy dose of skepticism from the faculty. Mm-hmm. And when I say healthy, I don't necessarily mean that, you know, it's healthy that there was skepticism, rather that it was a heavy dose of skepticism that the faculty raised. Mm. And there were numerous faculty members, including McKinley Melton and Akeem Williams, who had hands raised at the end and did not get called upon because these faculty meetings could not possibly go more than an hour and 1 second. At 5 o'clock, Janet Morgan Riggs cut things off and said, this discussion will be continued at a future meeting. There's only one faculty regular business meeting left. There are two total meetings, but the last one is consumed by valedictories for retiring faculty members. And certainly, given the number of retiring faculty members this year, we don't know yet, but in future years, you know, there are likely to be more, as there's a new faculty retirement incentive program that we're... FRIP 2. This is FRIP the second two. Iteration.
Apologies.
Yeah, we wouldn't want to shortchange FRIP 1. But, you know, so all of this is to say, more to come on the business major. Mm. What else is going on, Gari?
Well, this Monday, we're recording this on a Saturday, April 6th. Yeah, April 6th. So on Monday, April 8th, the first iteration of, you're getting me to say iteration now.
Mission accomplished.
The first iteration of Student Senate election forums. They're essentially a debate, but a forum sounds nicer, I guess. Will be moderated by the Gettysburgian regarding this meetings will be presidential and vice presidential. And then the second iteration will come in a later date with the secretary, treasurer, parliamentarian, and club's liaison.
Yeah, and so there are three candidates for president: Pat McKenna from the class of 2020, mm-hmm. Marissa Belanda from the class of 2021, and Hannah Dalzell from the class of 2020. And just to kind of a brief biographical sketch of each, I suppose, Pat McKenna is currently a senator. He's been a senator all 3 years that he's currently a junior. Mm-hmm. He last year was chair of the Senate Policy Committee, served on the Freedom of Expression work group. He was also parliamentarian last year and drove through some changes to the Senate's constitution. Mm-hmm. Hannah Dalzell is currently the chair of the Senate Diversity Committee. That's been this semester and some of last semester. She replaced Josh Gonzalez after that situation went a little bit awry. And then finally, Marissa Belanda is a sophomore currently. She's currently the secretary. She was caught up last year in the imbroglio of
word choice
of the I don't even know what you would call it, the scandal that involved voter intimidation, which Haley Gluhanich was barred from running for any Senate executive board positions and then was promptly appointed treasurer thereafter. But she was initially the winner of the presidential election, or candidate at least for the presidential election. And so, you know, I think that it'll be – there are three interesting candidates. They each have – different potential constituencies. Pat McKenna is a member of Sigma Chi and certainly, I think, intends to lean heavily on Greek connections. Mm-hmm. Hannah Dalzell has worked a lot with these diversity issues in her current role, so may lean heavily on some of those issues. I'll be moderating the presidential forum. I certainly intend to ask about their respective platforms, and we'll kind of go from there. It's still a little up in the air as to who the vice presidential candidates will be. There was initially one, but now there's some chatter that there may be a couple of more. I don't necessarily want to name names at this point because we don't know.
Absolutely.
But there will be a vice presidential forum in some fashion after the presidential forum, or maybe before. Haven't quite figured that out yet. That meeting will be held in Mara Auditorium,
which is going to be so fancy.
Well, you know, only the best for Gettysburgian
forums.
Forums?
Forums? Fori?
I think we'll just go with forums. And we'll go from there. There are also some budget requests that may eat into the hour, although I've been assured that we have an hour and a half if we want it.
Yeah, well, hour and a half is the regular Senate time now, so we should be fine. 7 to 8:30 now.
Oh, did that cause a fuss when that was changed?
A little bit. This was early last semester. So I think it's just been normalized at this point. But yeah.
All right. Sometime. Well, anything else in the news sphere you'd like to discuss?
Well, recently we just had Peace and Justice Week. It was the second, I almost said iteration again, the second year in a row for the Peace and Justice Week. So that just happened, and we'll be covering that soon.
And the Peace and Justice Studies Awards were won by Vanessa Martinez, Christina Noto, and Emma Dorsheimer, who are the students, and then Professor Lisa Portmus, who is a philosophy professor who chaired that program for a number of years.
Emma Dorsheimer and Christina Noto are very involved in the program. But I know Emma Dorsheimer is on the student council for Peace and Justice Studies. Also, tomorrow, because we're recording this on a Saturday, will be the second year that David Tuck comes back to speak during the Tree of Life conference. That was Hannah Labowitz's baby project last year. She got David Tuck, a Holocaust survivor, to come speak, and now he will be coming back to discuss the Tree of Life tragedy last year, but also I believe he'll probably speak about his experiences as well. And today is the second year of the Model UN, the Gettysburg Model UN, called Get Mun, which will be running throughout the day. It should be going on right now. I think they're on a lunch break as we speak. But that should be coming down the pike as well in terms of news content.
All right. I think that's going to wrap up our news segment. We'll be right back with the Bullet Report, followed by Gari's interview with Sarah Apadu. It's time for the Bullet Report. It's been a fairly exciting week in Gettysburg College sports action. On March the 23rd, the softball team defeated Mary Washington 17-5. The baseball team lost to Penn State Berks 15-10. The women's tennis team lost to Haverford 7-2. The women's lacrosse team defeated Ursinus 18-5. The men defeated Ursinus 13-9. The women's softball team lost to Mary Washington 12-4. The baseball team lost again to Penn State Berks 8-1. The baseball team on March the 24th lost to Gwynedd Mercy 12-4, but then beat them in the second part of the doubleheader 7-0. The men's golf team finished first of 12 at the Dickinson Invitational. The softball team defeated Hood 3-0 on the 26th. 26th. The baseball team defeated Lancaster Bible College 4-3 on the 26th, and the softball team then won again 12-6. On March the 27th, the women's tennis team defeated McDaniel 9-0. The baseball team defeated Messiah 13-8. The men's lacrosse team lost to Franklin and Marshall 13-8. The women's softball team lost to Lebanon Valley 3-0. The men's tennis team lost to Juniata 5-4, and the women won 9-0. On March the 28th, the baseball team defeated Penn State Mont Alto 10-2. The women's lacrosse team defeated the College of New Jersey 16-5. The softball team lost to Lebanon Valley 9-6. On March the 30th, the men's track team finished first of three at the Little Three meet. The women finished third of three at the same event. The women's golf team tied for first of five at the McDaniel Invitational. The baseball team lost to Haverford 8-1. The men's golf team finished second of 18 at the McDaniel Invitational on the 30th. The men's tennis team lost to Swarthmore 9-0. The women's lacrosse team defeated Muhlenberg 17-4. Then they lost to Muhlenberg. Then the softball team lost to Muhlenberg 2-0. The baseball team lost to Haverford 11-7. The softball team defeated Muhlenberg again 8-4. On March the 31st, the women's golf team finished first of five at the McDaniel Invitational. The men's lacrosse team defeated Muhlenberg 11-10. The softball team lost to Messiah 9-3. The baseball team lost to Johns Hopkins 5-2. Both of those games occurred on April the 2nd. Also on April the 2nd, the men's tennis team lost to Johns Hopkins 9-0. The softball team lost to Messiah 2-0. The women's tennis team on April the 3rd defeated Dickinson 5-4. The women's lacrosse team lost to Franklin and Marshall 9-6. And now that will thus end the Bullet Report. We'll be right back with Gari's interview with Sarah Apatow.
We are joined with Sarah Apatow, who's here to talk to us about open access. Sarah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me here today.
Do you want to give me your like rundown of like your email signature back when you were in college? Because Sarah, you did go to Gettysburg, and today?
Yeah, sure. So I graduated from Gettysburg last year. I majored in philosophy and I minored in theater arts and women, gender, and sexuality studies. And now I work here at Gettysburg in the library. I work in the Department of Scholarly Communications. So we're really involved with open access, like you said, and the cupola. And I'm really excited to talk to you about the work I'm doing now that I'm graduated and here.
Yeah. So can you, for the viewers that don't really know what open access is, can you give us a little bit of a pitch of what it is?
Sure. So open access really is at the heart of the Department of Scholarly Communications in the library. It's really all about creating equitable access to information, kind of in the way the whole library is about creating access to information. Scholarly communications really work to make sure that's more universal and more far-reaching, because a lot of publishing is done such that you have to purchase publications in order to read them, whether through your tuition dollars that help fund the library, or if you're not in college, just surfing the internet and finding journal articles. And it really works to remove those economic barriers to scholarship and information.
In your experience, how easy or hard is it to find those right now? Is it very common, or is it like you really need to search for open access materials?
So that really depends on, you know, who you are, where you are. For students either here at Gettysburg or at any college here in the United States, we're often not aware of how much privilege we have. There's this phrase that we use called information privilege, because every time we go to the library, you know, we can run a search and find plenty of articles that we need for our papers. But at universities in other parts of the world, and even in other parts of the country, their libraries aren't as well funded. And so you might be writing a research paper and having to buy your own resources to fund your research paper. And if you're not in college, but you're in the United States and you don't pay tuition to a library, you might run into the same problem. Public libraries might not be subscribing to all of these really, really expensive academic journals. So really, once you graduate, you start to realize how prevalent this problem is, because you don't have Musselman Library around the corner anymore.
Absolutely. I know a big part, at least for scholarly communications at Gettysburg, is open education as part of open access. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, I would love to. So open education is really the other half of what we do, and it's related to open access, because that too is really about removing those financial barriers to information, except open access is more about journal articles and scholarly publishing, whereas open education is about textbooks. We all know textbook prices are extremely high because we pay them every single semester, or at least I did up until last year. And really that creates a lot of problems. Students don't buy the textbook sometimes if they can't afford it, which means they're going to have a harder time learning the material. Some students will even drop a class because the price of a textbook is too high. I know I certainly did that here at Gettysburg. And other students will simply pick their major based on what books they can afford. So open education is really working to find alternatives to the really expensive materials. That way, you know, more people can get a quality education if they want it.
At Gettysburg, how does it work in terms of talking about open education with faculty and, you know, changing those prices so that they are lower and they are more accessible and affordable for students?
Mm-hmm. So from our perspective in the library, it's really about outreach and education, just letting faculty members know what options are out there or what we can do to support them if they want to reduce their course costs. There are a lot of new options to traditional textbooks that are called open textbooks that a lot of faculty at Gettysburg are interested in, and several have already switched to a free version of their textbook. So we help them adjust to that if they want to, or often faculty will just do it on their own. They don't even need our support sometimes. But from the student perspective, highlighting that student voice is really important. It's really important to me, and I've been really enjoying engaging with students on campus and educating them because, you know, students are the ones we're all here working for. So the student voice is really important in highlighting and really empowering students to use their voice.
Now, I know recently we had Open Access Week in the library, and that is mostly catered towards faculty and like talking about that. But I know you also did some stuff with student outreach. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. So we have two big weeks of programming in the academic year. In October, we have Open Access Week, and in March, we have Open Education Week, and often most of that outreach is about faculty because, you know, they're the ones publishing journal articles, they're the ones choosing class materials and creating courses, so it makes sense that libraries would focus on faculty a lot. But as an alum of the college and just someone who is really interested in student activism, I really wanted to put more of our efforts towards students. So not only did we try to create some really awesome and interactive displays for the library main floor, I've also been doing some presentations for undergraduates about these issues. And it's been really awesome being able to see Gettysburg students and my fellow peers engaging with these issues and getting interested in them and excited about them. It really shows that if you bring people to this information, they'll listen, and it's not cool to just assume they won't. So I've been really enjoying that.
Absolutely. And the presentations that you've been giving have actually been in the Women, Gender, and Sexuality Studies department, which is interesting in its own right. And mostly I've seen that you've been talking a lot about open access as a social justice issue. Why do you think that that resonates so highly in the WIGS department specifically?
Yeah, so I was immediately drawn to the WIGS department because it was a minor of mine, so I already have a relationship with that department going in. And that department was also, even though it was just a minor, it was extremely influential for me as a student. So once I started working in scholarly communications, I realized how deeply rooted our work is in social justice, which was really amazing to me and made me really happy. And so I very quickly made that connection between the themes I learned in WGS. And I contacted Susan Russell, who is the chair of the WGS department and my former advisor, to see if she would let me work with any of the students. And she did, which was really awesome. I really appreciated her support. And it was really great to highlight the relationships between WGS, which is a discipline that is really inherently about social justice, with my department, which I also think is about social justice, and really create those ties for students to see similar values in our movements.
Absolutely. And how has been the reception from students, like both in Open Education Week, but also when you're having these lectures and you're talking to students, what are the things that come up for them?
I think it's been really positive. When we have our main floor displays, I've been really excited every time a student comes up to me and asks me what this is all about and tells me they think it's really cool. Or every time I teach someone what the cupola is, because no one really knows what it is, apparently. It's our institutional repository where we host faculty and student work. And when I show students, you know, how many countries across the world Gettysburg work is being downloaded in, they get really excited by that. And same with the presentations. Once they learn not only that this is a concrete problem, but that there's things we can do about it, they get really into that. So I really enjoy it.
That's so cool. And what have you gotten any like feedback about the way that open education, open access, and the cupola is handled at Gettysburg? Especially because I think, you are in the interesting situation of just having graduated Gettysburg, so you are very much aware of what the student experience is. I'm sure that students are able to be more open with you about what they really, really want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I'm in an interesting position being a former student and a current employee because I really see both sides of things when it comes to textbooks. I totally see the student side of not wanting to pay a ton. But then when it comes to the faculty side, I totally see the point of needing the materials you need to teach your course. So that gives me a really interesting perspective. But definitely talking to students and hearing for them how much this really does affect them mm-hmm. has really motivated me to want concrete evidence of that we can present to different stakeholders on campus. So we'll be doing a survey next semester that we're creating on textbook affordability for students, because I think it's really important to know exactly what's happening, not just in general with this problem, but on our campus.
Absolutely. And I know for both of us, you were a humanities kid. I'm a humanities kid. So like for us, you know, books are obviously a big thing. Full disclosure, Sarah and I were like involved in the theater department together when she was here. So like, you know, plays are in a lot of abundance. But for science kids specifically, how does that change in terms of textbooks? I know, you know, they don't have like Project Gutenberg where you can get like full length novels for free.
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely a difference discipline by discipline. There are organizations creating these free textbooks, and they determine which textbooks they create based on the courses with the highest enrollment and the most expensive books. And those are basically all intro-level science courses because they have big, hefty textbooks that usually have new editions coming out frequently and vary class by class. So those are the classes where we definitely see the highest amount. So that means our solution to those problems have to be flexible and adaptable to many different situations.
What are the ways in which you can, as a student, advocate for lowering prices in your class, other than, you know, dropping a class or not buying the textbook?
Yes, there's a lot of ways. I mean, of course, one way is to directly talk to your professor about the cost of their books, but that could be understandably difficult for students or uncomfortable. So I definitely recommend, you know, using your course evaluation if you have something to say about the cost of course materials. Of course, it's too late for you at that point, but you might be able to make a difference for students taking the class in the future. Also, just talking with your peers and hearing what everyone else thinks, knowing that it's not just you having problems affording the book, because most likely it's a lot of other people around you. This is a pretty widespread problem. But there's also a lot of organizations that are actually formally organizing students to deal with this problem. There's a group called the Student Public Interest Research Groups, or PIRGs. They organize people, and in this case, students, around a lot of social justice issues, including textbook affordability. So their website has a lot of resources for organizing your student government or creating clubs around this problem. So there's really a lot of options.
Do you see that happening with the student body right now? Do you think it will happen in the future?
I hope it will happen in the future. That's honestly been one of my goals. I'm really lucky to have a wonderful student assistant. Her name is Hannah, and she's a first year here at Gettysburg. And she is really interested also in working with students and harnessing that student voice. So, yeah, that's like if I were to have a 3-year plan, it would be to have some sort of formal student body working on this problem.
Absolutely. Now, for you, what do you think cheaper textbooks will mean for Gettysburg? You know, if we see in like 5 or 10 years down the line mm-hmm. that, you know, no class is over $100, what will that have meant for you?
Well, if the college wants to really take seriously our diversity and inclusion goals, mm-hmm. I think textbook affordability is something we all have to be thinking about, student, faculty, staff, administrator, all of us, because it really is a barrier to achieving that kind of goal. You know, a lot of students use financial aid money to pay for their textbooks through the bookstore. That's money that we could not be spending on textbooks and using for other things. So really it's a matter of being able to diversify higher education as a whole, not just Gettysburg. I mean, the way Gettysburg would benefit are really the same across the board. But when it comes to really guaranteeing all people an education if they want it, that's really where these are going to come into play.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to end. So Sarah Apadu, thank you again for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
That's On Target for this week. We'd like to thank Sarah Apadu for being our featured guest today.
We would also like to thank the staff of the Gettys Version and the executive board of WZBT for their ongoing support in this project. Please be sure to subscribe to On Target on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
On Target is a joint production of the Gettys Version and WZBT. Our theme music was composed by Diego Rocha, senior music major focusing on composition in the Sunderman Conservatory of Music. Join us next week. I'm not yet sure who our guest will be, but I'm sure it'll be great. Have a great week.